I am loving.
I am fabulous.
I am beautiful.
I am saved.
I am a victor.
I am faithful.
I am devout.
I am accepted.
I am a Christian. I am MCC.
And I am MCC.
I am MCC.
I am MCC.
And I am MCC.
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 Our contemporary reading is taken from the article, Seven Reasons Why Congregations Should Embrace Their Transgender Members, by Virginia Ramey Mullencott. This article is from the HRC Resource Guide, Gender Identity and Our Faith Communities, a Congregational Guide for Transgender Advocacy, edited by Reverend Chris Glazer. I was moved to read in Chris Beam's book, Transparent, about a group of teenage trans people in Los Angeles who mentor and assist one another in learning the skills necessary for survival in a transgender-phobic society. Who taught these trans teenagers to be so helpful and faithful to one another? Chris Beam found that, whether they are still being parented at home or not, many transgender teenagers will find new parents. These parents are called drag mothers or drag fathers, and often they're just a few years older than their children. Beam continues, they'll mentor anywhere from a handful to dozens of the younger street kids, sometimes renting out large apartments as shelter for the more transitory kids. This especially happens in Harlem. Instead of allowing their own suffering to make them bitter, these drag mothers and fathers somehow find it possible to transform their pain into supportiveness for those growing up after them. Our scripture reading is taken from the letter of Paul to the Romans, chapter 12, verses 4 to 15, from the New Revised Standard Version. For as in one body we have many members, and not all the members have the same function, so we, who are many, are one body in Christ, and individually we are members one of another. We have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us. Prophecy, in proportion to faith. Ministry, in ministering. The teacher, in teaching. The exhorter, in exhortation. The giver, in generosity. The leader, in diligence. The compassionate, in cheerfulness. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with mutual affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not lag in zeal. Be ardent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in suffering. Persevere in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. Extend hospitality to strangers. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Listen to what the Holy Spirit is telling us today. May the words we receive inspire us, comfort us, and challenge us. Amen.
Hello, friends in Open Table Metropolitan Community Church. My name is Naomi Fontanos, and I am a longtime advocate of the transgender, lesbian, gay, bisexual, queer, intersex, asexual plus, or TLGBIQA plus community here in the Philippines and beyond. I am a co-founder and currently the executive director of Gender and Development Advocates Filipinas or GANDA Filipinas. We are an LGBTQIA plus human rights organization led by transgender women. I first became aware of myself as a trans person or as someone whose gender identity is different from their sex assignment at birth or birth sex assignment as early as when I was 5 or 6 years old. Even then, as a child, I already felt that I did not belong to my body, or that there was a mismatch between my body and the way I saw myself. And in fact, I would remember taking baths, and after I would tuck my genitals between my thighs, and I would look at myself in the mirror and would think that this was the correct body for me. Sometimes I would put the towel over my wet hair, and I would look at the mirror and see myself with long hair. Even as a child, I already knew that this was now how I look, was how I was meant to always look. And so people who have known me for so long actually know that I've had this look forever. I've never changed the way I look. I've never had my hair cut ever since I grew it. And every time I tell my friends in the community, do you think I should have like wear bangs, or should I get my hair color? They would always say, no, don't change your looks, because it would not be you. I mean, this is the Naomi that they've known for so long, and I think it would be a drastic change if I change anything about the way I look. But just to tell you that ever since I was a child, this is how I always saw myself. And for many trans people, especially for trans women, when they start to change their bodies in order to match what they feel inside to the way they want to look outside, it's a kind of blooming or a revelation of who they've always been. They are actually just showing you who they were always meant to be, that in their heads they've always known they were meant to be. I belong to a very devoutly Catholic family, and so it was very, very hard for me to come to terms with my gender issues or my gender identity as a trans woman. So when I was growing up, my strategy was to keep it inside, to not tell anyone about it, but just to carry that burden of knowing that you're meant to be someone else, but at the moment, your life will not allow you to be who you really are. So even if I knew when I was very young that I was different, that I was always meant to be a girl, or that I was really female, I kept it inside and I didn't really tell anyone about it. And it was like a secret that I bore until my high school years. So I thought that I just need to have a low profile, put my head down, and just do well in school, and then use it as a way to get out of my small town, of my life in the province. So that's what I did. I tried to excel in school. I did my best to graduate on top of my class. And then in high school, I only took one entrance exam for the University of the Philippines in Diliman. And I always knew I was going to pass it. And when I passed it, I never looked back. And I only returned to our province maybe in the first 2 years of university. But after that, I never went back at all, which is a bit sad, but it's something that I've been and coming to terms with now that I'm older. I think I'm bound for a return home soon, because my parents are getting older. They're both retired, and I'm from Bicol, where we have to deal with typhoons several times a year. And my family's home in Bicol was recently affected by the flooding caused by a Typhoon Raleigh. And so I worry about my parents, and I keep worrying about some of the properties we have there in Bicol. And so I think I need to go back home. In terms of coming to terms with who I was, I think because I couldn't do anything about my gender identity when I was younger. I waited until university, until college, to act on my feelings about who I was meant to be. And so it was only in university when I was already 18 that I started to take hormones and to really start to change my wardrobe. Of course, when I got to UP Diliman, all my clothes were for boys, but I started to slowly change my clothes, starting with my underwear. I started to buy underwear for girls or for women, and then I worked my way to my outerwear, from the innerwear to my outerwear. And then I guess when I was 19, on my third year in university, that was when I started to really wear the clothes for women, or to wear female clothing, and also to take hormones on a regular basis. So I started to do hormone replacement therapy, and also to change my clothes, and also to change the way I acted in public, to become more feminine. So it was a learning experience. So for a lot of trans people, it's like a second puberty or our second adolescence, because we're going through, we've already been through puberty, we've already gone through adolescence, but when we start what people see as transition, or what the community calls a medical transition, it's a whole new ball game. It's like going back to zero again, and then rediscovering new things that you were not taught, that you were not socialized into. So a lot of trans women like me here in the Philippines had to relearn the codes of behaving in a feminine way, or behaving as a woman, to be seen and viewed as a woman, not necessarily to pass. So passing is something that we find problematic, because a lot of people attach great value to passing. Passing is a concept in the trans community where after you do your transition, it's like you've erased any trace of being trans. And for us, this is a patriarchal concept, because we go back to standards of beauty and expectations of gendered behavior that are highly binary. So a lot of trans people realize that we are forced to adopt the notion of a binary, and to be able to pass as a binary woman, or to be able to pass as a binary man. And we feel now that these are also sources of oppression for us in the community, because we shouldn't have to pass. It's enough that we identify as the gender that we say we are. It doesn't matter if we look like the gender that we say we are. It doesn't matter if how we present doesn't meet expected standards of gender norms in our society. Our respect for trans people should be inherent based on their gender identity. We should accept trans people's gender identity no matter how they look, no matter what their background is, and even if we have this concept called passing. And we also have to keep on interrogating this concept of passing and how it is a source of oppression in our community. It's not the end all and be all for trans people. Our lives are not meant to just pass. We can do so much more with our talents and our gifts as human beings than just to think about passing. We always say that when a trans person undergoes transition, it's not only the trans person that actually does it. It's also the trans person's friends, the trans person's family, the trans person's immediate support group. So in my case, it was quite a struggle because, as I mentioned, I come from a highly devout Catholic family. And with my father, it wasn't so difficult, but of course, my father is a man's man. So he likes, when I was young, he would give us very gendered toys. Like he would give me robots and guns and balls, teach me how to play basketball, to teach me how to play chess, because these are things that boys do. And then with my mother, it was also the same. So it was a struggle for our entire family to come to terms with who I was. But I think I'm quite lucky because our family is not used to talking about sensitive things out in the open. And so I think they're like me. They also keep things inside of them instead of bringing things out in the open to discuss them openly. So I think you would be surprised to know that in my family, we never had a discussion about my trans status, or we never talked about my transition or how I was changing my body and was also changing my wardrobe. It's like they just saw it happen and then they tried to tell me in the ways they could that it was hard for them, but in the end, they just allowed me to be who I was without disowning me or without hurting me in the process. So I think I'm lucky in that regard, because for many trans people, family is such a burden for them to come out to their families and to be seen for who they are, to be accepted and to be loved for who they are. I am luckier than most because they accepted me for who I am, although it took a long time as well. I know many trans women friends who were asked to leave their homes when they started to transition, or they were physically hurt by their parents and siblings when they were starting their journey. So it was much harder. And now I see a lot more trans people from the millennial generation and Gen Zers who now belong to families that are quite accepting. And I think that this is a result of years of advocacy of the community, that because there were pioneers in our community who pushed for change, for acceptance, for members of the LGBTQIA community here in the Philippines. Now, younger LGBTQIA people are more accepted within their homes by their families. And I'm so amazed by all these young trans women who are in high school but are so beautiful already. They don't have to go through the hardships of going through puberty and then having to reverse that through transition, because that's what happens. Even while they're still young, they're already able to change their bodies to match their identities, and it's very, very heartwarming to see. So, as trans people, our main struggle is to be able to have the right to self-determination, to be able to change our name, to change our gender according to our gender identity. That is the basic struggle for trans people in the Philippines and beyond. But of course, as Audre Lorde reminds us, we do not live single issue lives. And our struggle as people is not limited to a struggle for human rights and social justice based on gender, but we also struggle for human rights and social justice on the basis of race or ethnicity, on the basis of socioeconomic status or class. And in the Philippines, we feel it most acutely. Our struggle on the basis of imperialism and colonialism continues up to now because of our history as a formerly colonized people. So, as trans people, we also are not only limited to the larger LGBTQIA community, but even members of the LGBTQIA community cut across all other sectors in society. So I personally know trans women in the south of the Philippines who are farmers, who are fisherfolk. I know trans women who are laborers, who work in factories. I know trans women who are also members of people with disability communities, PWD communities, trans women who are aging or who are senior citizens, trans women who are dealing with HIV and AIDS or with a debilitating disease. So our struggles as trans people are layered like any other community in the LGBTQIA spectrum. And our issues are not only focused on gender, but we're also fighting for environmental justice. We're also fighting for economic justice. We're also fighting for redistributive justice. And now, because our lives have shifted online, we're also fighting for digital justice, for us to have equality and our rights to be protected online as we now move our lives more and more in the online realm because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the novel coronavirus pandemic. So these are struggles that we deal with on a daily basis, and we saw during the lockdown how much more marginalized communities, including the LGBTQIA community and trans communities, are actually more affected when there is a crisis. So we saw many cases of discrimination and violence on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity, but as well as because they were poor, because they belong to certain sectors of society. So for example, in Pandangaki, Pampanga, we know of this case of two teenage trans women who were found to break curfew, and then they were subjected to this cruel and dehumanizing punishment of having to do a sexy dance in front of a teenager who was also caught breaking curfew. And this was broadcast on Facebook Live. And then our partner organization in Zamboanga, Mujer LGBT organization, was able to document a case of trans women there who broke curfew and were punished by being forced to have a haircut. And for us, this is a form of violence, because for many trans women, our hairs are a critical part of who we are as trans women. And if you cut our hairs, you are doing not only physical violence on us, but also psychological violence. And these are trans women who are from poor communities in Zamboanga. And the only reason why the military there was able to oppress them this way is because they are poor. Had they come from well-to-do families, this would probably not have happened. And then we also know of one case working with the Commission on Human Rights of a trans woman who was a victim of domestic violence, who was being physically beaten up by her own partner during the lockdown. And she is clear evidence that there was widespread violence that happened while people were in lockdown. And that was to be expected. But sadly, the response of the government was really very poor. And if she had not known another trans advocate, we would not have been able to help her escape her situation. If she was not able to reach out to a trans advocate who then contacted me, I contacted the Commission on Human Rights to get her out of her situation. So we also know that there are so many poor LGBTQIA Filipinos who were not able to access the social amelioration program during the pandemic simply because they were not considered as heads of households by the Department of Social Welfare and Development. And if it were not for many community leaders in different parts of the country who agitated and called the attention of the DSWD and the local government units where they belonged, this would not have been solved. So we know of, for example, something good that happened in Pasig because the community leaders there complained to their barangay and to their local government units that they were being left out in the social amelioration program. But in fact, they were heads of their households. They were putting cousins to school. They were sending their siblings to university. They were the breadwinners in their families. And yet, when the pandemic hit, they were neglected by the national government. So it took them to organize among themselves to see the change that they needed to happen. So we don't only struggle to transition, because this is not the only thing we face. We face issues of oppression on the basis of, as I said, gender, class, race or ethnicity, as well as imperialism and colonialism. And during the pandemic, we were so shocked when the president of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, himself granted absolute pardon to Joseph Scott Pemberton, the U.S. Marine who murdered Jennifer Laude. And even if, based on our analysis as advocates, Jennifer Laude was primarily a victim of gender-based violence, we cannot remove what happened to Jennifer away from the context of the Philippines as a former colony and to the present remains a new colony of the United States, where the United States government continues to dominate our affairs, our political, economic, and our governmental affairs. So this pardon is a clear evidence of oppression of trans people on the basis of imperialism. I think one of the best things about the trans community, especially the trans women community here in the Philippines, is that we have this informal system of mentorship and a sense of solidarity and sisterhood. So if you're a young trans person and you need help in your journey to becoming a woman, most likely you will find an older trans person who is ready to help you, who's ready to tell you the secrets of transitioning or the ins and outs of transitioning. And I experienced the same thing as many other trans women like me have here in the Philippines. We really rely on this community network to survive. So when I was in university in UP Diliman, that was the first time that I met a trans woman in our LGBTQIA plus student organization there. So she was the first to tell me about hormones. She was the first to tell me about how it was for her to change her body so as to match her identity, to really become the woman that she was always meant to be. So also as a person, I tend to gravitate around women. So I've always been good friends with women. My best friend in high school was a girl. Her name is Farah. She's now in the US. And I survived my high school because of Farah. And then in college, when I was in my freshman year, I also survived it because I belonged to a group of five girls and we were all friends. There were four of them and I was the fifth and I was the only boy then, but they were all girls and they took me in and they were like my strength. They were like the wind beneath my wings, so to speak. And so I think the reason why I was able to really have the courage to be who I was was because of my girlfriends. And then even after I started to transition, I ended up becoming very good friends with various other women who are now my lifelong friends. So these friendships have sustained me and have helped me in my journey as a trans person, also as an advocate. And most of them have their own children now, and they've asked me to be the godmother of their children. And I feel so old sometimes, so I've only said yes to one, and I refuse to be a godmother to the other children of my friends, because oh my God, it makes me feel old, and I feel like I'm not ready to be a godmother. And now, I mean, as someone who's come before a new generation of advocates, it's also hard for me to see myself as like a mother in the movement. Like, no, I can't. Like, it makes me feel so old. So a lot of younger advocates like call me mother, but I rarely use that mother card, because it's so hard for me to see myself as a mother. Like, if I do that, my sex life will end. So I can't. I have to feel sexy, I have to feel young. And so I never, you know, abuse this position that people see me as having in the community. I mean, don't call me mother. I'm just, you know, Naomi. So life has become possible for me because of the many friendships that I've had. And I'm very, very grateful for all the advocates and all the activists that I've also met in our community, especially some members of the Metropolitan Community Church. Oh my God, I was one of the young advocates when Father Richard Mickley was starting out here in the Philippines. And I've seen the MCC churches evolve through the years. And it's an honor for me to be able to see that. And we're still here. We're still fighting the good fight together. And I'm so grateful to share this journey with all of you. Don't call me mother. Okay. As I said earlier, I was raised Catholic, and I remember distinctly when I was 12 years old, I had a spiritual crisis where I would actually go to the church and I would pray so hard to God to tell me why He made me the way I was and why it was so hard. I was really asking God, why did you make me this way? Is it to make my life difficult? If it's causing so much unhappiness to my family, then why did you make me this way? And that year was a long and difficult year for me, and a year that I will never, ever, ever forget, because I came very close to taking my own life because of the physical, psychological burdens of the realization that I was different, that I was not the gender that I was assigned to at birth. And it was so hard, it was so difficult. But I think I got through it because of faith as well. Because even if I came close to, I had suicidal thoughts, I had difficulty dealing with my identity psychologically and mentally. But I got through it because back then I also relied on prayer. I also relied on reading the Bible. But after high school, and I was no longer attending a Catholic academic institution, and I went to this completely free environment in the University of the Philippines, I also started feeling that there was a distance growing between me and the church. But I've never thought of myself as atheist, and I've also never identified as agnostic. So I think in my case, I'm really just a non-practicing Catholic. I still remain to be a Catholic. I believe in the church's teachings, and also I believe in a higher being. I believe in a supreme being, but I'm just not as devout as I used to be. And faith for me saved me many, many times in the many, many difficulties that I've gone through in my life. The first thing I would do was to pray and to ask God for help. And I would always say, God, help me through this difficult thing that I'm going through. And as someone who has been lucky to learn more about happiness, I know that faith is an important source of happiness for many, many people. And so I have very deep respect for members of our community, the LGBTQIA community, to whom faith is a central part of their lives. As an advocate, I can really say that the number one thing that I'm most passionate about are human rights and social justice. So these are the only two things that motivate my activism. They are the foundation of my activism. And however, I want to tell you that we are not fighting just for individuals to be able to enjoy rights and justice in society, but we're also aware that we need to change structures in society that oppress people or keep them oppressed. And these structures include the socioeconomic structure, which is capitalist, and the gender structure, which remains to be patriarchal and cisgender and heteronormative. We need to change these structures to be able to effect change that will translate to members of our community being able to enjoy more human rights and social justice on an equal footing with anybody else. Will we be able to achieve this? Yes. Maybe not in our lifetime, but at least we planted the seeds of change in our lifetime so that the next generation will be the ones to nurture those seeds, make them grow, and so that the fight and the struggle for social change, for human rights and social justice will happen. They always say that the world as we know it was not meant for us. I would like to disagree, because if this world did not belong to us, or if we did not belong to this world, then why were we put here? I believe that we belong to this world as the next human being does, as any other person in the world does. For me, like the poem says, we are all children of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars, and we all have a right to be here. And as advocates, our role is to change this world, to make it better for all and for the next generation to come. That is why we are now struggling to change laws, to change practices in workplaces, in schools, in public spaces, so that the next generation of LGBTQIA Filipinos will not have as hard a time as we experienced in our life. That is the goal, a better quality of life for all. My message to my fellow LGBTQIA advocates and activists is to never forget the two most important questions when we are doing our advocacy work. What is it for? And who is it for? What is it for? It's for our community. It's for the people we love. It's for those who are close to us, the people who belong to our immediate support groups or our immediate circles, our friends, our lovers, our loved ones. This is what it is for. Or maybe I got it mixed up. This is who it is for. This is why we are fighting for change in the world. Not only for ourselves, but for our communities. And for what? For change. This is what we want. Change for the better, and so that the lives of the people we love will be better. My advice to parents and people who have relatives who are trans or are struggling with gender identity is, we have two choices when it comes to the trans people we know: to love them or not to love them. And for me, not loving them is the easier choice. So let's choose the harder choice, to love them, because I always believe that love will save the day, and your love for them will propel them to heights they've never known. Because of your love, they will become better people. Because of your love, they will be able to reach their dreams. And because of their love, they will be able to love themselves and love others as well. So choose the harder choice. Love them. I don't want to sugarcoat the truth to all the trans children or the younger trans people who will see this. I want you to know that the life of a trans person is hard. It will be difficult, and there will be times when you will feel defeated and you will feel completely unappreciated. There will be times when you will be invisibilized. You will feel that nobody sees you, nobody understands you, nobody loves you. But don't lose hope, because if you just keep at it, just keep going forward, just keep taking this path to live your truth, to be the person that you're meant to be, the person you've always known you are, the person you've always seen yourself as, you will eventually find someone, just one person, who will see you for who you are, who will embrace all of you and love you for all of your imperfections and for all that you have gone through. And these things will not matter. They will love you as the most beautiful person that you are. So never lose hope, and don't think that it will be darkness you went through. I have experienced it myself, and I do feel that out of the darkness of my struggles as a trans person, I have finally emerged and reached into the light of the life that I now live. And I hope that you will look at me and see that this is possible for you as well. I love you. I would tell myself that you are not perfect, and nobody is, and that is okay. And you need to be able to accept your flaws, because it is only in first loving yourself that, or FLY, that you will have the chance to fly. So I think that's what I will tell myself. Love yourself.